basically one day Persephone's hanging out somewhere. There's different variations of where she is. In some, she's like frolicking in a field. In others, she's in different locations. But while she's there, Hades basically opens up out of the underworld, out of the abyss, and abducts her. He just sucks her into the underworld. After Persephone goes missing, Demeter uses Hecate, the goddess of magic, witchcraft, and the night, her torches to search for Persephone everywhere. And during her search, Demeter refuses to let the earth grow as the goddess of the harvest, basically leaving no food for the humans to eat, and so all the humans begin to starve.
Originally, the myth here was used in ancient Greece to explain the changing of the seasons. So while Persephone was abducted and kept in the underworld, it was winter as Demeter was searching for her and letting all of the crops die, which put humanity in pretty much shambles.
So with the theme of the lack of vegetation and flowers and nature in the winter months, we are going to go ahead with our first song of the episode, Flowers in December by Mazzy Star.
Thank you. Knock, knock. Guess who? MRG Live coming right back at you. This time with a whole new list of upcoming live shows by your favorite artists. Hear this. Marika Hackman, Faye Webster, Empress of, Peter Cat Recording Co., and The Rare Occasions are a few of the artists MRG Live is bringing to you. Follow at MRG Live Official on Instagram to stay tuned with all the artists performing near you.
Welcome back to Pandora's Box on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia.
Where we left off, Demeter is still looking for her daughter Persephone. Out of nowhere, Helios, the sun, tells Demeter about what happened to Persephone, and it's really nice that he waited so long as well to tell her, because he did see it when it happened. And at this point in time, the gods start to realize that the humans are starving, and if they all die, there will be no one left to worship them. And then, functionally, the gods will have, like, no purpose, so Zeus forces Hades to give Persephone back. However, Hades is not super happy with this. He tricks Persephone into eating pomegranate seeds, and she's so hungry at this point after being kept in the darkness and in the underworld that she's like, okay, yeah, but here's the catch. Food in the underworld makes you stuck there. So, in the original story, she ate 4 pomegranate seeds. For every seed, she was forced to spend 4 months out of each year in the underworld. And the rest of it, she could spend back in the world of the living. At some point, it started to enter popular culture that she went willingly with Hades to spend 4 months. Sort of like an extrapolation of maybe Stockholm Syndrome or like classic Beauty and the Beast tropes. Mm-hmm. But we did some research on Reddit. And we found out that there's actually no source that anyone has heard of from, like, the original stories where Persephone has gone willingly. And we found this quote by Reddit user MySenpai13, who summed it up pretty well. Quote, unquote, he kidnapped her. Every version says she went unwillingly. Period. They seem to be a pretty functional relationship later on, but he still kidnapped her. That was said 4 years ago, and it still holds true to this day.
Right. I don't know if I agree with the second part there, per se, but
well,
I think I agree with the consensus.
There's still time to explore and discuss.
They're immortal, so, you know, who knows how they're doing today.
Right, so back to the point. This whole ordeal ended up resulting in the changing of the seasons, because in the 3 months where Persephone had to go back to Hades' realm, Demeter would be very sad, nothing would grow, which is used to symbolize winter. And then when Persephone came back, everything would be blooming again, which is meant to symbolize spring. Again, in many modern adaptations, especially where Hades and Persephone are painted to be lovers, Demeter can actually be painted as an antagonist who's kind of trying to take her daughter away from Hades, which is definitely an interesting take. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll dive into that in a moment, because there's definitely a lot to be said there. And so that is the story of Persephone's abduction and the resulting 4 seasons, which if you are from Vancouver, you would know that sometimes we aren't blessed with all 4 of those seasons. Sometimes it really just feels like rain all the time. But yes. And now moving on to our second song for today is Far Away by Little Sims, since, you know, Persephone is very far away for 3 or 4 months out of the year.
I would give all for the days memories were made. I'm a little bit ashamed. I won't live for you. Now my pillow would call your name. From the middle of the night through the day, I would give all. Don't wait around for me, my baby. Can't bear to see your tears, my darling. If you wait around for me, my baby, you feel this. We don't see.
it's Nardwar, a human serviette, and you're listening to Unseated Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM at doo-doo-loo-doo-doo-doo.
We have been called the Indians.
Justified in opening fire that day. Amy Allen has more.
The virus took on many shapes. The bear, the elk, the antelope.
Hosted by the Indigenous Collective of CITR 101.9 FM, Unseated Airwaves unveils the hidden pages of Indigenous history and contemporary existence. We are back and looking for passionate folks to contribute to the process of putting together our weekly radio show. Our community centers Indigenous joy, excellence, and current issues. Friends and allies are welcome. No experience is necessary. Come learn with us. Our Instagram is Unseated Airwaves, and that's the best way to keep up with us. If you're interested in getting involved or you have any questions, email me, indigenouscollective@citr.ca.
TransCare BC works to enhance the coordination of trans health services across the province and offer expanded health services to support transgender communities. They are doing this by developing gender-affirming client-centered models of service, ensuring access to gender-affirming and supportive healthcare that is equitable and available, and supporting network development to make sure trans and gender-diverse individuals, their families, and healthcare providers have access to information, resources, and support. Check out phsa.ca to learn more about this program and lend your voice to help create an inclusive and supportive system for trans members of our community.
Welcome back to Pandora's Box on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. And that was Far Away by Little Sims from her 2024 EP Drop 7. I really liked listening to this drop. Personally, it's a really good kind of in-between of weaving melodic sounds with different styles and beats. In this song and in other songs, she kind of explores more Brazilian beats a lot, even singing in Portuguese a bit. So it's a bit different from her past stuff, but still obviously with her essence.
Yes, so there are definitely a lot of layers to the myth of Persephone and a lot to be discussed. So for our first little topic of conversation, I wanted to point not necessarily to Persephone herself, but the actions and, I guess, attitude of the gods of Olympus during Demeter's hunt for Persephone. Obviously, Demeter, as the goddess of the harvest, you know, doesn't allow anything to grow, no food, and in ancient Greece, you know, most of the food came from the land. So, obviously, the humans began to starve and die off. And the gods only really seem to care about Demeter and Persephone's situation when they realize that when all the humans die off, there will be no one left to worship them, and that'll basically just leave them without a purpose. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how the gods here are, you know, a bit of an example of how some people, they view their lives as a performance and really are living to be perceived by others and worshipped, maybe, or maybe isn't a strong word, because I think there are certain people who truly live their lives with the motivation to be worshipped by others and to have others admire them, not really for anything of their own, you know, benefit or passion. Like,
for sure, that's a cultural product of like focus, I guess, within our society on appearances and perception.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oftentimes there is like definitely a pressure to conform and to feel like you have to live for, I guess, being perceived by others rather than for your own motivations, mm-hmm. and for your own reasons.
Yeah.
And I also thought it was really interesting, like that whole point you brought up about the gods beginning to care about maybe intervening with this whole abduction only when all of these humans started to die from no food, and they kind of came from that realization that, you know, if there's no humans, then who is there to offer them stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really comes down to like this theme that we see within a lot of mythologies and within a lot of mythological stories involving deities where they kind of, they do like to play, I mean, it's in the name, but they do like to play God of, like, starting plagues and starting different disasters and such to mess with the human population, because I guess from their perspective, it's like mortals, humans, their time on Earth is so fleeting and seems so insignificant, maybe. And how that kind of turns in this story, because, yeah, obviously there is a lot of, like, power that gods have over humans, but it's not necessarily just a one-way relationship, right? Like, the gods exist and continue to exist because of belief and because of, you know, sacrifices and offerings, and really it is, it does go both ways. And I think that's interesting when you apply it, I guess, to, like, this culture of performativity and, like, mm-hmm. performance, how, like, the people that are perceiving you and the people that you are catering towards and stuff, like, it's not just, like, a one-way relationship, like, that has an effect on your own understanding of self and your own identity, as well as your relationships with your friends and your family and stuff like that, right?
For sure, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, that was kind of a word salad, but I feel like, you know, maybe play it back if
yes.
you can. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, I feel like this does connect to your point a little bit. Just sticking with this topic here, I also feel like, you know, there is definitely issues today of performative activism. People will repost just to not face backlash or maintain an appearance of caring for others, but really you're posting something that you haven't really put any thought into educating yourself on, just so that people think that you care and people think that you're so benevolent.
And it's really like, if Persephone was abducted in today's world, right, and it made the news, would you post about it?
Would you post about it? Would you protest? Would you...
Would you, you know, repost an AI image of Persephone mm-hmm. being kidnapped?
Or would you be, you know, trying to put in the work? And would you join Demeter on her hunt for Persephone?
Yeah, it's important questions to
Food for thought. Okay, and with that being said, we are going to play Tail Whip by Men I Trust.
Right, Men I Trust is a Canadian indie band. They were formed in Montreal about 10 years ago, and a lot of their music has that, you know, classic, sort of relaxed indie vibe to it. We all know what we're talking about. And we picked two songs from their discography, Tail Whip and then Numb. We just felt that the sound of it kind of had that fall vibe, you know, things slowing down, things cooling down a lot. And also, lyrically, if you pay attention, there are some parallels to these greater themes in Persephone's story, maybe her relationship with Hades, with being far away from home, you know, loneliness, and all these other emotions that aren't really talked about within the original myth, but we like to think that Persephone might have been feeling some of that.
So with that, here is Tail Whip.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You are listening to Pandora's Box on 101.9 FM CITR, broadcasting from the unceded territories of Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. That was Tail Whip by Men I Trust, and now our next song is Numb by Men I Trust.
What a lovely Vancouver summer night. I can't wait to sit by myself at the beach and look at my phone. Huh? What's that?
Man, what are you doing? Get over here and come jam.
Wow, what a lovely assortment of musicians. What are you guys doing?
This is E-Studio. We come together and build connections over music. No musical experience needed. Just come socialize and build your confidence playing music if that's your thing.
Wow, this is so awesome. Now I have a real-life connections with Vancouver's international community of musicians and creatives. Thank you, E-Studio. E-Studio is an international jam group where we celebrate music from all around the world and play together. Follow us on Instagram at estudio.cafe. estudio.cafe.
And welcome back to Pandora's Box on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. Both of those songs I find are very, like, fall to me. I don't know. They just put me in that fall mood, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I highlighted some lyrics that kind of stood out to me when we were first listening to the songs.
Okay.
From the first song, Tail Whip, there's this one part where the lead singer, Emmanuel Proulx, sings about going to a place where I used to stay, writing something new in this home I know. And then in the next song, there's a line about, like, hun, I never meant to cheat you out of time.
Mm-hmm.
I really like those two kind of lines in contrast to each other, like having them back to back.
For sure.
It definitely feels almost like a conversation between the different actors in the story, between Persephone reflecting, lamenting, and then, you know, perhaps like a conversation with Hades as well. Mm-hmm. Just, I know it's getting a bit imaginative, but yeah, Tail Whip I imagine to be a bit more about like being in the context of summer waning and going back to this place where she used to stay, being the underworld. And similarly, how we kind of see the weather change as Persephone begins to near her time in the underworld. And then introducing Numb, the next song, which talked more about cold mornings and flowers, and it feels more like you're there in the underworld and it's Persephone's presence and more of a conversation between Hades and Persephone about that situation, about abduction and stuff like that, and kind of how that cycle continues, you know? But yeah, that's both those songs, this band, it's definitely a recommendation to any who haven't tapped in yet.
Yes.
And it's really just to say that to me, fall is kind of a conversation between warmer times and winter. Just like those two songs were working kind of in conversation with each other to create a certain fall atmosphere. I feel like one of the key things about fall to me and what makes it so distinct in fashion is just like how you can balance these more stylish summer flair elements with these more classic and stable winter staples.
Yes. Let's actually talk more about fall fashion because, you know, it's October, it's starting to get a little more chilly. There are some warm days. Yesterday was pretty warm.
Lenny
well, when we're recording this, it was warm.
Yeah.
But yes, let's talk about fall fashion. What are we liking? What are we seeing? What are we thinking might come up?
I think, I mean, as always, right? And this is a classic. We all saw that post. I mean, some of us saw the post.
Yes.
Of Lenny Kravitz
his
with the
big scarf. If you are listening and you have not seen, I highly encourage that you search up Lenny Kravitz big scarf. It's actually everything that I aspire to be. Like, I need a big scarf.
And whenever I see that video, I'm like reminded, like, why don't I have a big scarf?
Exactly.
And, you know, maybe I can use a blanket this year or something instead of like buying any
at
big
that
scarf.
Point like if this I'm I just pulled up a photo, like, this is basically a blanket and I need it.
Yeah,
I
you
need
know
it.
What one thing that this reminds me of, right, and this I feel like we can talk a lot more about this, is big scarf, that's pretty close to like a cloak, you know, that's pretty close
yes.
to like Gandalf the Grey, right, like Lord of the Rings fashion, very what's the word
medieval. We are definitely having medieval feeling as well this fall. Medieval fashion for me in like more contemporary interpretation of it, because obviously I'm not going to be wearing full armor or like
toiling the fields, you know,
yeah, or like a floor length like linen, like basically
whatever.
Like swamp of fabric. But something that I have really been enjoying is, how would I say this? Not tasteful, because I think this material is tasteful, but like a sprinkle of chainmail.
Mm-hmm.
I just love chainmail. Like, especially I've been seeing these like headpieces that like, it's basically just like a cap that you would put over your head.
Right.
And it's chainmail and it has like, you can put like a little bead to hang off of it. And it just like, it's so flowy, but it's made out of metal, so it has like a nice little contrast. And I've also been like definitely on my Pinterest board, you know, I have a lot of like chainmail like full dresses, which is like
a little impractical.
Yeah, like that's not
well,
gonna be worn, but I would love to wear it. Like, I think my ultimate goal is basically to look in a way like modern day Joan of Arc. For anyone listening who may not know who Joan of Arc is, she's a 15th century patron saint of France who, in like art and renditions of her, she's often depicted wearing chainmail because she was known to cross-dress, and she had very short hair because she wanted to fight in the army. But you know,
very cool
15th
lady.
Yes, she was very cool. I mean, 15th century really though. Yeah, lady is
a little, she was aging. I think she was younger than us.
Yes,
like high school, yeah, aged, which is absolutely insane. And I think that's another, you know, thing, yeah, to be discussed.
Her
with medieval
Persephone
times. Young women.
They were the girls, they were not women, like those were girls.
Yeah, but we're trying to remember them, right? And
yes,
celebrate their contributions
their,
to society.
Exactly, their accomplishments.
And to,
yes,
literary works and to, yeah, but storytelling.
Yes. What else are you feeling this fall as
I
we
think,
head to Persephone descending?
Yeah, I think one thing for me with fall is that we were talking about like medieval fall, right? You mentioned,
yes,
linen, like a full length linen gown.
Yes.
I really like this kind of idea of like returning to simpler fabrics,
for
you know,
sure,
or maybe simpler is the wrong word, more like from the earth. I've been seeing a lot of like hemp materials,
yeah,
sort of like enter sustainable fashion brands,
mm-hmm,
and stuff like that. I think I've also been seeing a lot of like materials that are typically used for something like paper, so they're,
mm-hmm,
a bit more biodegradable, but they're lasting if you take care of them.
Yes.
And I think that's like kind of my moral of the story when it comes to addressing medieval fashion and medieval fall is like, you know, I feel like we're so trapped in this like, again, cycle of consumption and of, you know, what's the new different thing, and it's like, what is in this fall, like let's buy the new thing, but it's like, what's in this fall could be repurposing something that you already own, and it could be really like
always
taking care,
yes,
of your items and,
mm-hmm,
investing in these items that are going to last you a really long time if you take care of them. And
yes,
that's like what's important to me. Like if I had a big scarf like Lenny Kravitz, I would treat it like it's my baby. Like
very true.
Not going on that tumbler, like 2-in-1 tumbler dry cleaning situation.
Yes. And I actually really like that you brought up more organic like fabric materials, because once again, Demeter and Persephone are, you know, they're vegetation goddesses, they're goddesses of nature, the harvest, crops, and we should honor them by wearing fabrics that come from the materials that they so kindly give us.
That's true. Maybe that's like the ultimate offering.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm going to start wearing pomegranate, just skin, just as clothes. I'm going to sew together a bunch of pomegranate.
You know,
peels.
I feel like that could be really cute, like it's an accent.
Yeah.
Definitely if you're leaning towards more like simpler fabrics and stuff like that, and more kind of, yeah, like, you know, simple linen and stuff like that, like accessorizing with a pop of color like a pomegranate,
yes,
could be maybe the accessory of the season.
And thank you for acknowledging that.
Yeah.
And
I mean, didn't we see something similar
to
that at the, I mean, sorry to bring up the Met Gala, but in, what's his name? Art Donaldson.
Mike Face.
Yeah, Mike Face.
Art Donaldson in Challengers.
Or sorry, no, wait. Who was it that had the turnip? Like, there was a turnip.
Was that
brooch?
I think it was him.
It was either him or Josh O'Connor that had the turnip brooch. And I was.
Oh, yeah, it was him.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, so Mike Face, so an actor who was in Challengers, West Side Story, pretty big musical guy.
Yes.
Yeah, he had a regular suit with a turnip accessory.
Yes.
And I think,
which the internet is calling a bedazzled veggie.
Right, and
nice.
Where's the bedazzled pomegranate? We're definitely rambling, but
I love
very
it.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so since we haven't talked too much in depth about Persephone and kind of her evolution throughout time and stuff like that, I just wanted to bring up this piece of art, this art collection done by an American and British artist, Mary Frank, in her 1987 collection, which was like 58 reimaginations of Persephone.
Ooh.
And so, yeah, it's pretty interesting. But Mary Frank works a lot of like mixed medium, so she was doing like sculpture as well as sketches and stuff like that. And she kind of described it as like just a bunch of studies of Persephone. One of the things that she was talking about in an interview was about how this sculpture that she had made, it was kind of almost life-size sculpture of Persephone, but it was in fragments, right? Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, her head here, her torso here, and they were all kind of coming into conversation, but separate at that. And that made me just, like, think a bit about the fragmentation of Persephone's identity, which has been changed throughout, you know, not only this artist's lifetime and through her 58 different reimaginations and perceptions of Persephone, but throughout, you know, within
all the variations and
right, and within society itself and in changing times. And so in the traditional and the original story, we've kind of gone through how, like, Persephone was captured by Hades, she was abducted, and there's a lot of, like, violence that happens within that. And it's not painted as this sort of, like, ambivalent thing. Like, it is a pretty straightforward kidnapping. But what we kind of see through authors and, you know, in feminist literature and postmodern retellings of myths, we kind of see a bit more leeway in that, you know, where depictions of Persephone as having more agency, even eating the pomegranate seeds, knowing what they symbolize and what they hold for her, right? Knowing that this is, like, maybe the path for her to become the queen of the underworld, as and how that is considered, I guess, like, more than being a maiden of, like, spring and flowers and all these other more traditionally feminine associated things. And I thought that was really interesting because it is, like, when I first heard that, I was like, oh, this is, like, the girl bossification of Persephone, right?
Yeah.
Like, girl bossification, I guess, to explain is, like,
when the image or, I guess, actions of any female presenting, like, individual or character are kind of warped to, you know, sometimes be like, oh, she's taking so much power and agency over her situation, or, you know, like, she did it all on purpose because she's such a go-getter.
Yeah, exactly. So I was, like, thinking that was kind of the tone in which her character transforming from a passive sort of victim and morphing into someone who has a bit more self-autonomy and agency. Like, it's a complicated thing because it's, like, on one hand, it's a good thing to tell stories about, you know, women having autonomy, right?
Situation.
Exactly, mm-hmm. and stuff. But it's also, like, what does it mean when you try to subvert a story which is kind of inherently told as one, you know,
as her being, like, sold off,
right, and, like, kidnapped
without
and abducted
her own consent, yeah.
So to what extent is that to, like, make it more palatable to, let's
modern
say
audiences.
Yeah, modern younger audiences who maybe don't want to grapple with the sexism inherent to the myth itself, especially in the context of ancient times when this stuff was, like, way less addressed, I guess. But I also came across some perspectives that were talking about how classical myths often were created to tell these kinds of stories and are often inherently, you know, have these sexist or otherwise problematic stories and plot lines. It's more of a reflection of who was coming up with these stories and who was able to tell stories and what kind of characters were represented in what way in stories of the past. And that's, like, something that rings true even to this day, right? Like, we still need to have conversations about, like, how people are presented and perceived. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to, you know, say, like, hey, why was she portrayed in this way? Why was this story even created about the goddess of spring? And why was it conducted in this manner to explain the changing of seasons, right? Like, there's so many ways to go about that.
For
like,
sure.
How did this specific story come about? And obviously we'll never know because we don't have a time machine. And even if we did, I feel like it'd be pretty difficult. Like,
I don't know if we could go ask.
Nope, I don't know if we speak
ancient Greek.
So it'd be pretty difficult, but it does kind of bring a duality to this conversation on, like, what does it mean to change a myth and what does it mean to retell it?
And even just, like, belief of what, like, a woman like Persephone is capable of, because we know ancient societies maybe didn't always think that women could even think that hard for themselves.
For sure. I think that just kind of brings it back to, like, the original artwork that spurred this train of thought, I guess, which was just a reminder, like, Mary Frank's 58 Reimaginations of Persephone. And there is this one kind of description about one of the pieces, the fragmented Persephone sculpture, where her arms are outstretched, one of her knees is raised. It's made from large sheets of clay that have been incised, bent, and folded to give a surface a fragmented appearance. And that's a quote from the Brooklyn Museum website that was showcasing this exhibit. And I just thought the idea of, like, incisions and sort of this act of, like, cutting parts of a character and remodeling them, you know, in the same way that clay is malleable, and kind of re-piecing it together to, I guess, tell your own story or tell a different perspective. And I guess, like, how that has been happening, like, over years and years, right? Like, modern adaptations of myths are not, like, the first adaptations of myths to happen, because these are, like, stories that are, you know, traditional, and they get changed, and they mm-hmm. are malleable, and they change across time and place and different contexts and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. Lots to cover. Lots to think about.
Another thing to think about, just briefly, why is it that women eating fruit tends to equal disastrous in so much media? Snow White?
That's true, yeah.
Persephone?
With the pomegranates?
Mm-hmm. We'll leave you with that. And let's wrap this episode up with a song by one of our favorite musical groups, Cocteau Twins, and their song, Persephone, of course. Before that, I would like to say thank you so much for listening to Pandora's Box on CITR 101.9 FM.